It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azhatalin? Then perhaps they will, but then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
And that, William, is why your father and I are getting a divorce. But we both still love you.
Yeah, that's what parents who are divorcing always say.
They do. There was some movie that actually, or maybe it was, I don't know, something did that joke. They were like, just so you know, this is all your fault. We still love each other, but we can't stand each other when you're here.
And you're always here, so
exactly. Yeah.
There's only one solution.
All right. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Magical Talking Hat Podcast, the only podcast in the world that was originally a bear. I'm Tony.
And I'm William. This is episode 248.
248.
Yep.
Which is significant because...
I don't know. I mean,
you said last time.
Yes, we're within a year of our 300th episode. The countdown has begun, so to speak.
Actually, it's not a final countdown. It's just another countdown. Yet another countdown.
Yeah, that's not that impressive then. Yeah, so for those of you who are just joining us, that's what you have to look forward to. Here's the deal. We have a hat. It's magical in that it has its own email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. And people who need people are the luckiest people in the world. Other people, and some of those people, who are the luckiest people in the world, write into that email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com, with little notes, little comments, topics, questions, that kind of thing. The hat, all on its own, magically transmogrifies those emails into little note cards with the information written on them that manifest physically within the hat itself. It's Ursine, which I know starts with a U, but I'm following the bear theme. Servants. draw the note cards out of the hat at random. Read them on the air. Talk about them till we're bored. Do that for about an hour. That's the show.
I appreciated it anyway.
I didn't come up with anything.
That's all right.
The only E word I can think of right now is Ermengarde. And that's more of a proper name. And hilarious because it sounds like Ermengarde.
I don't.
It's an old name.
Okay.
And my niece played Ermengarde in The Little Princess, which was the last play we saw her in, which is in my head right now because tomorrow we're going to see her in another play. She's going to be in Annie.
Oh.
So we're driving up there. We're taking a half day and driving up tomorrow.
What part did she get in that?
Some prominent orphan that's not Annie. I don't recall.
Okay.
Here's the thing. I hate Annie.
Mm.
A lot. But I love my niece, so
I'll be... Why do you hate it a lot?
Because I just think it's so... probably because I hate, like, children and stuff. Like, the whole thing, again, the problem I frequently have, I don't sympathize with anyone in it. It's all so weirdly sort of grotesque in its way. Everything. Yeah, and I mean, yes. I get that it's musical theater, but, you know, the mean people are too mean, and the good people are too sort of randomly good in some ways. And, yeah. It's just too silly and simple and... And I don't care for most of the songs. Which, you know, that would save it. It could be a shitty, shitty story. And you could like the songs. But that is not the case.
Mm.
So, has it just been 1 week? I think it has, but damn it. We gotta do two doubles in a row. I'm gonna get so sick of your face.
Well, yeah, considering you already are sick of my face.
William, helpfully pointed out that even though we have to do double next time, because of Christmas Eve is a Thursday, and we can't record then. That also means, by definition, New Year's Eve is a Thursday, yep. So we have to do double now and double next
week. Which I'm surprised we forgot that.
Theoretically, we could. Yeah, exactly, because we have the day off.
Oh.
So we could record earlier if you wanted to.
Mm. Well, that's something to consider.
Yeah. Okay, so how's your week been?
It's good. Same old thing, really. Nothing interesting to report or that I want to report anyway. What about you?
Went to the doctor today.
Oh, yeah?
All of my numbers are a little worse, which is unsurprising, but...
Why is that unsurprising?
Because I totally fell off the wagon of my diet and my exercise and everything for quite a few months now, actually.
Oh, really?
I've gotten back into it. I mean, we never completely gave up on the gym, but there was a lot of time where we'd go, like, once a week or even not at all that week and stuff. And the diet, yeah, I've been just totally off the diet. But last Friday, I started up the diet again, and we're doing good. So far this week, we've been 3 out of the 4 days to the gym. So,
I think okay.
And it's, here's the thing. I realize I'm not real worried. I mean, I need to do something about it. But this isn't a goal. This isn't an action I'm doing and then finish. This is my life now. Mm-hmm. Like, even if I hit, like, what I wanted as my ideal weight,
mm-hmm.
nothing, which I would still have to continue to manage my weight via what I eat,
mm-hmm.
and I would still need to go regularly to the gym to exercise. Like, I'm just going to need to do that in order to maintain myself at
mm-hmm.
this point.
Mm-hmm.
So, I keep thinking this is a brilliant way of putting it. Nobody else seems that impressed when I say it, but whatever happens today in terms of how successful I am with my diet or not, or how whether I go to the gym or not,
mm-hmm.
has no impact on what I'm supposed to do tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
I'm always supposed to go to the gym, well, on work days, and follow my diet.
Yeah.
And whether I did it yesterday or not, I'm supposed to do it today.
Yeah.
And so it's not good that I stopped, and that kind of sucks, but pick it up. Start over again, and I guarantee I'll fall off the wagon again at some point before the end of my life. And, you know, just start over again. So this is just...
Thanksgiving comes once a year.
Yeah. well, on Christmas, yeah, I think I've already decided, you know, for those few days, fuck it.
Yeah.
But this is just my life now, and so, you know, I'm not happy that I was off it, but, I mean, there's no question of what to do, and as Trish pointed out earlier, I've done it before, I can do it again.
Yeah.
So, it'll happen. My doctor's not particularly worried either.
Well, that's good.
What else? I think I've seen 3 movies. Had I seen The Night Before? Last time, the Christmas movie with Seth Rogen?
I don't think so.
Okay.
Or at least you didn't talk about it.
I didn't talk about I Am Chris Farley either.
No?
All right. Yeah, then I've seen 3. And, apparently, I'm going to see The Force Awakens on opening day.
Opening day?
Yes. Well, December 18th, the opening Friday. I guess technically it opens before, but...
Really?
Yeah, I think they're doing some showings as early as even the 15th. But yeah, the real opening day is Friday, and that's...
Huh.
And we're going that day.
Okay.
Because Trish bought us tickets. We get, through work, we get some time off that day.
Mm-hmm.
And so we'll leave work at like 1 and mm-hmm. go have lunch and then go to the 2:30 showing. So I'm a little scared, but it'll be cool to see. I mean, if it were me, I would have waited, you know, like a month or whatever, but because I'm never in a hurry. But it's not me, and I still want to see it, and so that'll be cool.
I don't even know when we'll see it.
Yeah. It'll be out for like 6 months, so you'll be fine.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure. I'm not worried about that.
But no, I've seen 3 movies. We saw The Night Before, which is a Christmas movie out right now, with Seth Rogen, Joseph Gordon-Levitt, and Anthony Mackie as 3 young men in New York City who have spent the last, I guess, 13, a bunch of Christmases, they just go out and party, like, themselves, and they have certain traditions. They wear sweaters, and they go to Rockefeller Center and all this stuff. Dealing mostly with the fact that one of them's parents died shortly before Christmas, and so the other sort of stepped in. But now, they're all older, and one's married, expecting a child, and one's a football star and other things, so this is going to be their last year and then hijinks ensue. Had you heard of this movie at all? I guess you don't watch a lot of
TV. I think so. I think on, like, ads and things.
Yeah. It's exactly what you think it is. And exactly that. We had a great time. We watched it. We laughed a lot. Won't ever see it again, I'm sure. but it was really amusing. Seth Rogen was written to steal the part. Like, it focuses... It's ostensibly your POV character is primarily Joseph Gordon-Levitt. But they pushed for Seth Rogen because it's Seth Rogen... And because all the drug humor lies with him.
How old is he? Is he like your age?
I feel like he is, but I don't actually know.
Okay. Because originally you described these as young men in New York, and I thought, when I think of young men, I think of...
Yeah, I guess 20, they're not young men.
20-something.
I suspect they were playing 30-somethings.
Okay.
I don't have any idea how old they actually are.
Which you're 30-something, right?
I'm real close to 40, but yeah. I will be 39 in a month. Well, a month and in about 5 or 6 weeks.
Wow.
Yeah. But yeah, Seth Rogen's whole arc is primarily drugs, because his pregnant wife, because he's been such a solid rock for this last night out, gives him a present, which is a small box filled with basically all the drugs. She found everything. So there's a joint in there. There's ecstasy in there. There's a bunch of mushrooms in there. There's a little thing of cocaine in there. And he, of course, overdoes it. So, like, he takes way too many mushrooms and freaks out. So then he takes cocaine to try and balance it out. And then all this stuff. And so it's a lot of him being crazy. And that takes up a fair bit of the movie. Yeah, spoilers for the night before the Seth Rogen drug comedy. It has Seth Rogen and he does drugs. But it's funny. I mean, I enjoyed it. I absolutely enjoyed it, and I laughed a lot. So, it's another one of those, that's true with any time I think I recommend a Seth Rogen movie, which doesn't happen real often, but if you understand what you're accepting by that, go ahead and watch it. It's good. Same thing with This Is the End. This Is the End, total stoner comedy. If you can accept that, it's hilarious. It's way better than this one, but this one was good. It was a nice change of pace. And then we saw, we had been curious about this before, there's a documentary somebody recently put out called I Am Chris Farley. And it's about, unsurprisingly, Chris Farley. And the trailers look very interesting. They get a bunch of, like, interviews with people who knew him and worked with him. And everybody you'd think, and a few people that I'm like, I didn't even know they knew him. Like, Bob Saget apparently was pretty close to Chris Farley, and I didn't realize that. Looked really exciting. Really not good.
Really?
Yeah, real disappointed. Well, let's just start with the basic answer. I don't feel like I learned anything. Chris Farley was very funny, constantly trying to make people laugh, had major self-image issues, was arguably kind of dumb, and was the sweetest guy in the world, and had addiction issues, and died from it, and probably because at a fairly young age, he got fame really fast, and it sort of overpowered him. These are all the things, that's pretty much the sum total of things I knew about Chris Farley going into this movie, and that's the sum total of things I learned leaving this movie.
What do you mean, kind of dumb?
I don't know, all the stuff, like, the few times I see him not be on, which is not very often, he just seemed like sort of just a goofy, dumb guy.
Oh.
And this movie did not gainsay that idea. Not even necessarily that he was, like, of lower intelligence, but, like, that he just wasn't particularly even interested in that kind of thing. Just a doofy, you know. He would have been a jock in school, you know, that kind of thing. But super nice guy. And all, like, and yeah, I didn't get anything out of it. Except that he dated a Victoria's Secret model for quite a long time, who now has had a ton of plastic surgery and looks a little weird, and has the weirdest sort of Jennifer Tilly fake kid voice that kind of creeps me out.
Well, maybe.
But I don't consider that a lesson well learned.
Maybe the problem, well, not really a problem, maybe the issue here is that aside from the fact that he was famous, he was a fairly ordinary person.
Well, he was pretty much what you saw. I mean, yeah. Except that and in some, they talk about that, like, especially like his, the Chris Farley show sketch that he used to do, where he'd have people and be like, remember that time? Like, the people who were like, that's pretty much him. He's not really acting. It's just him. But that's just the blanket thing that I'm like, right there, there's no reason to see the documentary. But on top of that, there were some really good, heartfelt, and in some cases, insightful interviews. Interspersed, especially when we were doing the sort of timeline of his life, there were a lot of times where we would cut to what was clearly, and in some cases it was obviously SNL, sometimes it was other things, footage of him acting in a movie, at Second City, in SNL, that was, the content was tangentially related to whatever part of his life we were talking about.
Okay.
But just in the most broad sense, because it didn't actually, it was like a comedy sketch he was in. And he didn't write comedy sketches, so none of them were particularly autobiographical. It was just like, oh, we're talking about when he was in football. Have we got a shot from a movie where he's in a football outfit?
Oh.
And it just felt so fake and so weirdly exploitive. And again, I'm doing this a lot lately where I'm blaming documentary makers. Because again, the interview material was pretty solid here. And really, there were some amazing moments that David Spade's in this, and David Spade, as you would expect, has a lot to say.
Oh yeah,
is pretty still broken up about it, but is David Spade, and so there's a, it's this wild swinging of sort of just sort of glossing over stuff for a moment or acting like it didn't really matter to him, but then saying something else that very clearly shows it was a big deal, but he likes to downplay it. Or he insults Chris a lot during his things, right, immediately followed by talking about, you know, how much he loved this guy. But not in a funny way at all. Like, it's very clearly sort of him trying and stretching to give a legitimate, sincere view, but scared of it, especially on film, you know. Mm-hmm. So, like, that kind of stuff is fascinating. Adam Sandler, who could just fall off the planet, and I'd be fine with it now, had some insight. There were a few times where he sort of theorized about what happened to Chris and stuff, and I thought that is really interesting. And, you know, the occasional sort of behind the scenes. Remember this sketch? Well, actually, it was because of, you know. But, yeah, no, it just, it was put together really bad. Did not particularly like it at all. I mean, it's not, I'm not angry for having seen it or anything, but just whatever. And then, last night, after Trish broke cable TV for the entire city, the entire county.
Wow, impressive.
Do you guys have Mediacom cable?
Yes.
Did you notice you didn't have TV last night?
Yes.
Did you blame Trish?
No.
You should have.
Because we watch Arrow on Wednesday nights, and it was gone.
What actually happened is someone up in Cedar Rapids cut the cable, and it killed the TV for the whole county.
Wow.
But
That surprises me that's even possible, that someone can cut one cable. And
But here's where it gets interesting.
But our computer.
Yeah, the internet still worked. It was specific to the TV.
Huh.
And we had some issues with our phone, but they may or may not have been our problem. It appeared to be specific to the TV.
Okay.
Which is why we just watched a movie on HBO Go, because we had access to the internet. But anyway, funny coincidence, Trish took some time off yesterday. She had to do some errands involving Christmas gifts for people. And so in the afternoon, she decided to set up our answering machine, because I was supposed to do it and I haven't got around to it. And in the process, she had to unplug a lot of things and turn some things off and stuff like that, including at one point the modem and I think even the cable box and stuff. And coincidentally, it was right when this happened. So she unplugged some stuff, plugged it back in, and the TV wasn't working. And she thought it was her, and I got home and I thought it was her, and we spent hours trying to fix it.
How'd you figure out what?
Because we finally decided we were going to have to call tech support.
Oh.
And we call them, and they were like, if this is about the Iowa outage, we are aware of the situation. And I was like, what? And I get on the phone, I'm like, good news, honey, it's not your fault. And sure enough, by the end of the day, it was working again. But anyway, because of that, we watched something on HBO Go, and we watched Kingsman, The Secret Service. You familiar with this? It was like last year, I think.
I don't know. Maybe.
Spy movie.
Oh, yeah.
Spy action movie.
Yes, yes.
Did you see it?
No.
You seem very resigned there.
Well, because...
it implies that you know more about
it. No, this was one of those things that... You know, lately... You know, you see ads now if you watch television online or whatever, yep. which we prefer to do sometimes. And that's one of the reasons why we'll watch things like we tried to watch Arrow on Wednesday. That's one of the reasons why we'll watch just on the television, because you're going to get the same amount of ads anyway.
True.
So, so for the last, you know, few years, we've been watching some things just on television and seeing ads online. And I find myself getting really annoyed by movie previews. Constantly. Nope. And this was one of them, because it was like, here we go again. There's another one of these movies with a heavy white male cast,
oh, yeah.
a big testosterone-driven whatever. It's going to be the same thing that you've seen 1,000 times over. I don't know why they keep making these movies, except that people keep going to them. So
yes.
So there it is.
But
I remember being annoyed by that, by seeing those previews all the time.
I've discovered, especially if I spend a lot of time like watching a lot of YouTube videos, they pick like an ad or two, and those are the ads for the day. So stuff becomes like, I've seen this ad.
Oh yeah,
so
that's another thing. Especially if you watch online, you'll see the same ad over and over again.
When we were in the theater, I think for the night before, and I was like, oh, I know this ad, because like 2 days ago it was the ad of the day on YouTube, and I was on there, and I'm like, I've seen this thing 4,000 times. I'm getting there.
Here's what happens on TV though. While we're watching television, not only will you see the same commercials over and over, but the same block of commercials,
yep.
because that product is owned by the same company. Like, yep. if you see a Green Giant commercial and a Pillsbury commercial and a Honey Nut Cheerios commercial all together, and you keep seeing that same block, well, that's because they're all owned by General Mills. So, you know, Hot Pockets, that gets thrown into that General Mills mm-hmm. block, too. So, anyway, don't interrupt your story.
But this whole repetition of ads on YouTube has resulted in something amazing. The 8-year-old next door knows a couple of Hillary Clinton campaign ads verbatim. And will recite them.
That's nice.
Which is not super good, because her parents are big Bernie Sanders supporters, so it's a little weird. And I told her, I said, you need to market this. You could get 15 minutes of fame big time with this one.
Good.
But the other thing is she's 8, which means she's not just parroting. She knows a lot of the words and sentences and things. And what this means is that she is a huge Hillary Clinton supporter now.
Really?
And it to the degree that she doesn't understand how someone wouldn't be. Which immediately makes sense to me, because... Most, there are exceptions of just horribly put together ads, but most ads, most political ads, based on their wording and phrasing and stuff, always sound like a good thing.
Sure.
That's how they phrase it. So if all you ever saw was one candidate's ads, you'd like in your whole life, which is literally what is going on for her, you'd think it made total sense. The fact that I see so many conflicting and contradicting ones, and also see what those politicians do later after those ads, do I know how full of horseshit those all are. So for her, it sounds great, and nobody else is arguing against her. Yeah. So I'm like, no, I totally understand why she would feel that way. Because to her, she's like, how would you not want all these, you know... equal pay for women in the workplace and all this. Like, why would you not want that? Of course.
Everybody gets candy.
Hillary's gonna do it. Yeah. It's so that's one. But anyway, yeah. So we saw Kingsman. What I always viewed Kingsman as is a new take on James Bond that was skewed younger and looked like skewed more sort of ensemble.
I guess.
And I was excited about this because I like the genre, but I'm sick to death of James Bond. It doesn't make any sense anymore. It's all very repetitious. And, of course, it's misogynist as hell.
Okay.
And frequently racist as hell.
Yeah.
So I was hopeful, but I never bothered to see it. I was going to get around to it, whatever. My boss had seen it. My boss said, you know, if you accept it, what is it? It's just an empty action movie. It's pretty good. And I watched it, and I have to agree. I liked it a lot. I would like them to stop making James Bond movies and just make these, and I will pay money to go see them in the theaters. That being said, there were some things that bugged me, and they bugged me so much that I can't stop thinking about them, or at least one in particular.
Okay.
The movie has some awkward politics, but again, spy movie, action movie, like that's, I'm sort of willing to float with that. It does. It starts to fall apart as it goes on. Like there's more and more plot holes, or just why the hell did we even have that kind of thing going on in place. But in general, still really good. Very violent, and R-rated, hard R. Everybody's dropping F-bombs all over the place. We were not fucking around with this one, which surprises me. The whole feel of the movie, I would have thought they would try and squeeze in a PG-13, but no, it's definitely R and deserves it. It's apparently based off of a comic book, which makes me, it's based off of a comic book by Mark Millar, who I hate, and who's the guy who did Kick-Ass that I hate, and this was actually adapted for the screen and directed by the same people who did Kick-Ass, which, again, I hated, but I didn't hate this one, except for one thing. By the way, minor spoilers for a tertiary plot in Kingsman are about to follow. Not even tertiary, quadrinary or what. There's a real little subplot here that I'm going to tell you about that's really mostly here for jokes, and so I'm going to spoil those jokes for you. Deal with it, or turn it off now. So, it's another, like, world domination plot. There's a lot of James Bond-esque aspects to it.
Okay.
And occasional references and winks and nods. They have bits about how to make a proper martini and stuff like that. But our villain is trying to get world leaders and powerful people on his side. And they basically either agree or he imprisons them in his lair. And of note is a Swedish Swedish princess, member of the Swedish royal family, who does not agree with him, and she gets locked up somewhere in the movie. And we even see her, we're sort of following her as the sort of every prisoner. Like, we see her later in her cell, and he says, I'll let you out as soon as you agree to my conditions, and she's like, I never will. He's like, I'm not letting you out, whatever. She's there, whatever. So, when we take on the bad guy's lair later, that happens to, like, our hero happens to be going down the hall with cells, and that's the one that he's at. And he's there to save everybody, so that's great. And she opens the door, she's like, will you let me out? And he, having a moment of impish mischief going on here, says, if I open the door, will you give me a kiss? And she, based on I have no idea what, says, if you get me out of here, I'll give you more than a kiss. And he's very excited, and it's a dumbass sexist joke. But it's on a level that I can live with. I've seen many times, whatever. And then, like, his guy on his comms tells him, and he's like, sorry, I have to go save the world right now. And he leaves, because it's the thing. Or he starts to leave. And she says, if you save the world, we do it in the asshole?
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, what?
Yeah.
Like,
she says in a Swedish accent, which is not fake because I looked her up and she's actually Swedish, that if he saves the world, she will reward him with anal sex.
And that's, it's not like a lost in the translation kind of thing. It's like,
no, no. And it's not, great. Not even to, I mean, not that this would make it any better, but at least logistically it would.
No,
not
that
this
I really...
was a suggestion of his or anything. She spontaneously was like, you know, it would be fun. If you save the world, then we'll have anal sex. I mean, what she specifically says is, if you save the world, we do it in the asshole.
But there's no joke.
Oh, there is, but you're not going to like it. And he says, yeah, I'll definitely be, I don't know. He says something in the affirmative, because he's a 20-year-old white male in a movie, so of course he wants that. Anyway, he goes, spoiler alert again, he saves the world. And so, after that, there's another thing, because he grabs some champagne and a couple glasses and is running, and the guy on the comms is watching and can't figure out where he's going. Turns out he's going back to the cell to get his reward, of course.
Okay.
And the guy is watching through the glass. He has glasses with, like, the that he can, that his handler or whatever can see through. And we have a little bit of a thing where there's a combination on the door, and he doesn't know the combination, but the guy helps him, and he gets in. And sure enough, she's in there and she's smiling and she's really looking forward to this, clearly. And then we cut to just the POV view from his glasses, his handler seeing this through the screen as he's walking. It's a completely different shot now. She's in a different place. She's apparently laying on the bed. And there's a lot of fairly explicit nudity for like 3 seconds. And then the handler is like, oh, he shouldn't be watching this. So he turns off the screens or whatever. And then that's the end credits. And not that it really matters, but no other hint of nudity in this whole movie. That's true. There are no other women. And again, outside of this thing I just now spoke of, I really liked this movie. A lot.
Well, you're a fan of the genre.
I'm a fan of good action, and there was good action, and Colin Firth being a badass was kind of fun. There was a lot of stuff I liked about this movie, and again, if they make more, I will go see them. But I'm just so mad. And here's the thing. I get what it is. It's a wink and a nod to James Bond again, because this is a thing James Bond did. I remember the end of Moonraker and stuff, you know, at the end. And it's a thing in these kind of movies. You save the world, your reward is sex with a beautiful woman. This is part of the trope or everything. But here's the thing. They managed to do a wink and a nod to the shittiest part of James Bond, and on top of that, made it twice as offensive as any version I've seen in a James Bond movie.
Well, to you. But not absolutely. Not to their target audience, though.
Well,
I mean, they've got a demographic, and it was perfectly fine, maybe even really fine to the demographic.
The funny thing is, today when I've been telling people about it who have seen the movie, nobody attempted to be apologetic about that.
And
in fact, half of them were like, that pissed me off, too.
Oh, okay, well.
And that's the thing. We're talking, all told, about 2.5 minutes of, you know, a slightly over 2 hour movie. But like all night, all today, it's all I can think, like so much of the rest of that movie I really liked, and all I can think about is how much that just pissed me off.
Well, maybe it would be nice if people could make movies for that demographic without that particular piece that the demographic seems to like, but it never works out that way.
But
at least that's our experience. It's one of the reasons why we don't want to watch these movies anymore, is because you can't.
Most of that in, and I wouldn't be this mad. We could have done the I'll give you more than a kiss, and he could have come back later for it and have her smirking there, ready to have sex with him. And I would have been like, that is dumb, and that is offensive, but whatever. But the fact that we had to be, oh no, if you saved the world, like, that she would spontaneously, and then that we had to show that, of course, through the eyes of the glasses, because we're not even seeing him. It's literally just long enough to see her naked butt, and honestly see a little more than that, and then end the movie. Literally, the credits. And I'm like, I feel like, because I get the trope and the joke are stupid, but they are common. Yeah. And I would have seen it and been like, I am disappointed that you guys had to do that. But, and I think you could have done with that. But this, I'm like, it's like they worked to try and piss me off.
So, did it seem like they upped the ante a little bit on the trope? Is that what?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Okay. Well.
Because this, well, first of all, what tiny bit of character we already wrote into her, which was a tiny bit, this is completely at odds with it, in my opinion. But it also makes every Bond girl ever seem complex, nuanced, and fully fleshed out in comparison. Because I don't even know. Nobody says to that guy, oh, well, if you're not just rescuing me, but in fact saving the world, if you succeed, I'll let you do me up the ass. Nobody does that.
No.
That's not a real thing that a person ever says. And I mean, there are some fucked up people out there. But nobody says that to a stranger they just met. No.
Okay, just, well. It's somehow it doesn't surprise me, but like I say, this is one of the reasons why we don't even watch movies like this anymore. Because there's always something like that.
Yeah.
But, you know, whatever.
To its credit, I suppose just so it could have this shitty little coda, there is another female character who is not the love interest and who actually gets to do some shit.
Oh.
She's not quite as badass as any of the men, of course, but yeah, she actually gets, and you know, has some emotional issues that only the support of our hero can help with, but yeah.
It's a complex thing, women in movies and TV, because you know, you shared an article that someone apparently shared with you about
well, no, that Cracked had.
Oh, right, the Cracked had about
Jessica Jones.
Jessica Jones,
which seriously makes it look way more worth watching, and also has really convinced me I don't think I want to watch it.
Yeah, and worth watching. It depends on kind of what you mean by that. I mean,
of a better quality of show than I gave it credit for, and I already thought it was probably pretty good because everybody was saying it was pretty good.
But the article, which is very good. I mean, if anyone is interested,
go to Crack. It's in website. Relatively recent articles, and it's I believe the headline bit is 5 reasons the Jessica Jones show is darker than you think.
Yeah.
And it's, as a real brief thing, it basically details how that show is portraying a realistic version of what it is like to be abused, basically to be a survivor of abuse.
Right. And
Nothing else is really portraying that realistically.
And the great thing about it is the author of the article, who is a victim of abuse herself, she felt that, like nothing else it seemed like she'd ever seen. She seemed to indicate that nothing else had portrayed abusers and survival of abuse in quite as realistic a way. And it was very a therapeutic, I guess, for her.
Well, and I think
watch.
That feeling you get, especially if you have a traumatic experience where you feel that there is no there's no example, there's no illustration out there, certainly no media thing. And so this is just essentially a validation of her experience, because although it's Jessica Jones and it's a superhero thing and it's completely different context, she felt that this was a version that matched her experience.
Right. And
so
that
she was getting validation out of that.
And one of the reasons that validation was important is because several of the points she mentions in her article, which is that specifically she's talking about abuse that's not physical, so therefore not readily seen or obvious to the observer. And so because of that, there can be the person who's abused are more prone to blame themselves. The person who's abused is more prone to be blamed by others. The abuser is more prone to be able to garner sympathy for him or herself, and so on. So to have that kind of external validation is really important and critical. Now after you've read the article, you mentioned that you might not want to watch the movie, and I presume what you meant by that is what you often say about films that are very realistic and instructional in terms of a person's horrible experiences. If you don't require said instruction,
yes,
then you don't really need to be taken through that emotional roller coaster.
And also, as I have said many times, I'm a wuss nowadays, and anything that puts me through trauma like that, I feel like the show would make me feel bad.
No.
But yeah, also that. I feel like, I mean, and I'm sure I slip up because I'm in this society, so I'm sure I've been acculturated in such a way that I slip up sometimes. But to me, it's a non-issue. Not the least of which, in these sort of abusive, stalkery relationships, I'm like, if one party doesn't want to have anything to do with the other, there's no debate
out. Yeah, right.
Everybody gets the right to say that. And unfortunately, they trump your desire to be with them because they're still an autonomous individual.
Right, right.
And so many of these are about that. Like, oh, going to still be together. Oh, but you just... Like, no, as soon as they say that, it's done.
But, I mean, then you go to a move...
Ethically, it's done, I mean to say. I don't mean that actually
right.
effectively
but,
causes the stalker to leave.
But then you go watch... films that are billed as romances in our culture, and they're all about
oh,
that same kind
God.
Of obsession and not giving up and being persistent.
And the weird things with rom-coms.
Yeah.
And don't get me started again on my super ex-girlfriend, which something recently just reminded me of, which is terrifying.
But even though I've seen only one episode of Jessica Jones, I saw it before reading the article.
Weirdly, episode 7, because you're
just... No, just saw the first one. And I did see it before I read this article. And from what I've seen so far, I know exactly what she's talking about. I agree with all of her points. And I find it very encouraging and heartwarming even that she found such solace in this story. And I'm glad it's out there for that reason. Yeah. And yet I doubt that my wife and I are going to continue watching it for a variety of reasons.
I'm curious what those are, because all I have heard so far is nothing but...
Well, first of all, while I do appreciate that this is a very different, a very much more realistic, and maybe even for some people empowering version of a woman who's coping with being a victim of rape,
we're still having gotten yeah, having it, to cope
it,
with being
exactly.
A victim.
It's still another story about a woman. Now,
100% with you on that. And to be fair, before this day, I had no idea that any of this had any... I didn't really know anything about the plot. I believe I knew that Jessica Jones was a private investigator, had some sort of superpower, and drank heavily.
Okay, well...
And is played by Kristen Ritter, which is still throwing me, because literally the only place I know her from is from commercials for the TV show Don't Trust the Bitch in Apartment 23, where she plays the most vapid, selfish, manipulative monster ever. So I'm like... Wait, you mean she's a real actress?
Oh, she really is. She's very good.
But I can't picture
there's no
it
question.
At this point.
Yeah.
But yeah, apparently she's
so amazing. So there's that problem. It's okay. I'm glad they're portraying it realistically and all
but
of this
how
stuff.
How about not portraying it for a change? How about somebody being strong without getting raped?
Well, it's just an easy thing to do to a female character. Mm-hmm. I appreciate that they actually did some homework and decided to make it's somewhat realistic. I'm glad for that, but it's not like it's not been done, or the rape angle, let's just say, has not been done before with female characters. And it's the first time we watched it was just very disappointing on that level.
Suddenly I want to reboot The Punisher and reverse the gender roles. A woman's husband and child are brutally murdered, and now she just goes around
well, not that would be new either, but at least it would be a little different.
Because that's the thing. I want a husband to get fridged. I want a husband or a boyfriend to get fridged.
Okay.
Finally.
And another problem is more. It has to do with. It's also a superhero story.
Yeah.
And as you probably know from things I've been talking about recently, I'm finding it increasingly difficult to get into superhero stories that are either in the origin or in some other way are closely tied, the person's heroics are closely tied to trauma or tragedy. And one of the reasons this bothers me so much is because I hear so much commentary. I mean, I've heard people talk about certain superhero stories. And like one person will complain that they added some trauma to some superhero story. And then the next person will come up and say, well, if they didn't add the trauma, what rationale could there be for the person, you know, embarking on a heroic life?
Which sounds remarkably like, if you don't believe in God, why would you ever be good?
Exactly. That's exactly what it's like. Now, again, if a hero who does heroic things because they're just a good person doesn't trip your trigger, fine. But don't try to make it sound like it's human nature that you're only going to want to do heroic things if some tragedy has happened to you personally or is happening around you.
Now I'm trying to come up with a superhero that didn't suffer trauma that motivated them to become a superhero.
Well,
there are varying levels of trauma.
For example, Wonder Woman didn't experience trauma. In her original story, she did not experience a trauma to decide to go out into the world of men.
All right.
Arguably.
Well, and unfortunately, if you go back far enough, especially in DC, virtually none of the superheroes had traumas, because back in those days, it was like, ha-ha, I'll just be a superhero!
Well, Bruce Wayne's original motivation for being Batman was he was
the bestest detective that ever was.
No, he was bored.
There
he
we
was
go.
Rich.
There we go.
He was a rich socialite, and he was bored. That was his original motivation. Arguably, Superman did not become Superman because of a trauma. Now, yes, well, his planet was destroyed, but he didn't see it happen.
No.
And by the time he learned about it, he already had his adoptive family and everything else. So, you know, I think people make a bigger deal about it even in stories now. But yeah, it used to be that a person was a hero because it was the right thing to do. And then, you know, a few
and
people...
a tasty way to do it.
And a few people thought it might be interesting to have some, like Batman, for example, to have his parents gunned down before his eyes. And then suddenly everyone thinks, oh, that's awesome. That's what every hero... And so you get these people arguing that... I mean, they're basically making statements about human nature, which, again, I wouldn't normally care about. But our whole culture seems to be pushing these really cynical notions of human beings that I think is actually damaging and harmful to our culture. And I just, I want to see other types of stories.
The image of Wilford Brimley as Superman. It's the right thing to do.
The way to do it. But anyway, so here's...
I'm going to spin around the world so fast it goes backwards.
Here's yet another story.
Diabetes.
About a superhero and trauma. It's like, I'm just not interested. Yeah. That's not what I am interested in superhero stuff for. I mean, that's probably the reason I don't get into Marvel in general. It's because Marvel...
We're all about that these days.
Marvel is like, we're going to tell you the story about an ordinary person, and oh, by the way, they have superpowers. I'm not interested in that. I'm just not interested in that. When I want a superhero story, it's going to be about them being a superhero, super and hero. I might be interested to know little details about their personal life, how they manage their dual identity or stuff like that. I find it's interesting how they can be this noble good person, but they have to lie to everybody they know. You know, little things like that are interesting, but you know, I would rather have the superhero part with a little bit of normal life and not the other way around.
Yeah.
But I get it. If other people like that, well, that's fine, but it's not my thing.
Postmodern vibe. I mean,
well, it's a Marvel thing. I mean, they did that with Spider-Man too.
Yeah,
I mean,
I think it's true even outside of Marvel nowadays with any modern superheroes. I think you get that because they want to sort of deconstruct. So what's basically anything post Watchmen.
Yeah.
Cause Watchmen was like, you know, the idea of superheroes is actually kind of fucked up. And ever since then, everybody's like, oh yeah, let's show how that is.
And think they're being really original and stuff to do that. But, I mean, to me, you know, it's part of it. It always gets back to this whole I'm not really a fiction guy thing. I mean, one of the things I was a fan of when I was a kid was myth, which isn't technically fiction the way people enjoy fiction today. I mean, it's fictional. It's not real. But it's also heavily archetypical, allegorical, you know, all that stuff. And I like that.
I should say something about the one true faith or something.
No, but you know what I'm saying.
Absolutely.
I mean it.
I always know what you're saying. I just don't usually care.
So I think, I mean, one of the reasons I like superhero stories is because if they're mythic, you know.
Yeah, this is what makes Sandman awesome.
Exactly. And so if they get too like every ordinary life, I like films with people who are in ordinary life. But I don't, I mean, like, for example, Lars and the Real Girl.
Yeah.
Great film.
Yes.
Very authentic.
I need to see that again.
Very authentic in terms of showing people's lives or whatever. I like that kind of thing. But when I'm in the mood for a superhero movie, that's not what I want. I want superheroes.
I just realized what I'm going to make you watch in between episodes. I had something picked out, but now I have something new picked up.
Okay.
Anyway. Yeah.
I didn't mean to take up so much time talking about that.
And it is interesting because there are certain... I mean, I like a lot of supernatural TV shows and stuff, but I tend not to like superhero ones.
Well, I know. That's one of the things you and I are different about.
No, but I think that may be tied into a similar thing. Like, if you have stuff involving... I like stuff where people are unusual or special or have powers or whatever, and it makes their lives interesting. I don't like the hero ones. I don't like vigilante stories in general. I think is what it comes down to. I think that is accurate, actually. Because if you give me a superhero story where they're part of, like, a secret government organization or whatever, I'm usually way more into that.
Well, here's the thing.
I think I may just not like vigilantes.
I think of the superhero stuff I like as being a fantasy subgenre, really.
No, that makes sense.
Not so much science fiction. I mean, I like science fiction-y elements in it.
Well, and that gets tricky because a lot of people consider fantasy a subgenre.
I suppose, fiction, but for those superhero stories that are trying to be more like science fiction or more realistic or more I don't know what, I'm just not as interested.
Yeah, I mean, it has its heart in old-fashioned speculative fiction. Ideally, any superhero story should shed light on the human condition via inhumans or superhumans.
Yeah. Well, also...
Same thing Gene Roddenberry was trying to do.
Also with it's...
mixed results.
The thing is, in our own lives, especially in our culture and in our time, there are kind of a scandalously large number of opportunities to do things that are morally laudable. I mean, you know what I'm saying?
Yes, and I would, but I try to avoid scandals.
Well, when I say scandalously large number, I mean it's some of the things that are morally laudable today really shouldn't be. Yes. Like, they should just be the normal thing people do.
What do you want? A cookie?
Exactly. Yes. But so in the culture we have now and in the times we live in now, there's lots of opportunities to do something that ought to be something everyone is okay doing, but they're not, and that suddenly makes it something that's kind of unusual to do. And it's hard to go ahead and do those things, because the reason people don't do those things is because there's some consequences. It's not pleasant, you know. You do the right thing, and you're glad you did the right thing, but someone's going to smack you down for it, and you just have to decide, well, I'd rather be at peace with myself for doing the right thing and gotten smacked down, or I'm going to be afraid of being smacked
down.
And
it comes up a lot in media. I'm used to saying, like, I really hate saying this, but this was the best XYZ that I've seen.
Well,
it's sad that this is as good as it gets, but we are so low on time, we haven't had a single question.
Well, I'll just give you an example and I'll finish. Like, for example, making comments, pro-feminist comments, say, online. Okay, that's a risky thing to do. It shouldn't be, but it is. So because we live in this world where things that should be normal are actually somewhat heroic, it can be inspiring to see a story about someone being a hero. I mean, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. On all kinds of scales, including the mythic and fantasy scales. So, you know, that's why I like those stories. And Jessica Jones is not one of those types of stories. Mm-hmm. And so... we'll likely won't keep watching it. But I do appreciate that this woman's experience, and I'm glad it's out there. And if I knew someone who'd gone through something like this and was struggling, and I thought, you know, the triggers in the show wouldn't cause any problems or whatever, I might recommend it for these very reasons. Or I'd recommend the article, and they could see for themselves what they want to do. But anyway, I shall draw from that.
Yes.
Because that's what this show's about, even though...
Absolutely, and we really have almost no time.
Coffee.
What about it?
What is your favorite battle song? I'm not sure I know what that means.
The battle song of the Brynji from Lex. That's not true at all. And that's also a deep cut that not many people get. What is your favorite battle song? Capital B, capital S. Battle song. Like marching unto war.
Well, I mean, like... like, American soldiers really do play music while they're in the midst of... I mean, so, it could be something that I think I would play if I was doing that. Or it doesn't mean... I don't know what it means.
I'm going to go with... yeah, the... well, I'm going to go this way. I like to play with the idea of your personal soundtrack. And especially nowadays, you can actually do that.
Yeah, that's right.
Which annoys me. Sometimes I'm walking down the hall at work and I'm like, you guys don't understand how badass I am right now because you're not hearing this. annoys me.
And do you start to walk in slow motion?
I totally do. By the way, this came up again today. So I haven't seen Reservoir Dogs since high school. Hmm. And I don't really intend to because I feel like I would not hold up well. But it was so ingrained at me at the time that any time I see a group of people walking in a relative close cluster, a little green bag pops into my head. I just can't not hear it.
Okay.
Today, there were four guys walking down the hall, and they were walking together, and they're already... the whole thing. So, anyway, but so within your personal soundtrack, what's the song when fighting happens?
Fighting doesn't happen in my
personal soundtrack. I know, but if it did, what would be the song for you? What would be your badass battle anthem?
If you've got an answer, go ahead. I'll think about it. I'll give it some sincere thought.
Honestly, I feel like the big... Well, it's a weird parallel. I'm like, what are my workout songs? Because it's kind of a similar thing. Oh, okay. Thing. But honestly, the one that I think is my big one are selected tracks from the instrumental soundtrack to the movie Lady Hawk.
Mm.
That was done by the London Philharmonic Orchestra and the Alan Parsons Project. Because I don't know, as a kid, that movie... I ingested that movie, and so a lot of my definitions of things like battle and romance and humor came out of that movie, which is fucked up because that is the shittiest romance in that movie. That's terrible. but there's a lot of very exciting and very, you know, synthesized 80s. Type music in there, but very exciting music that is very action oriented for me.
Oh, I don't know.
Most of the time it's instrumental, but it's often electronic instrumental.
I suppose. I guess I don't know.
Just don't say Wagner.
Is it called, you mean Flight of the Valkyries or something?
Yeah.
No. Is it called O Fortuna? Is that what that piece is called? That's just the first line.
I think it is called that. That is a good one.
I do like it a lot.
That is a good one. A little on the nose, but.
Well, of course.
Yeah.
Everything I would that's say true. Is on that's the true. Nose. I am one. On the nose.
That one has a little more menace in it than I normally. Well, and there are certain situations where that's perfect.
I think the reason
if we're calling my general.
I think the reason I pick it is because. Even before I looked up what the translation of the words were,
yeah.
I already knew. You know, that's really odd for me to hear an operatic piece and to feel like I know exactly what they're saying here because of the music and because of the choral piece and how it all fits together.
Yeah.
And when I saw what the lyrics were, and I looked in a couple places to make sure it wasn't just someone looking it up, I thought, wow, this is exactly what this piece feels like. I mean, just despair and hopelessness. And,
yeah.
And to me, that's what battle is. I mean, if people are fighting, like in real war, no one's going to win. Nobody wins. And that's what that song expresses to me is the lose-lose situation, basically.
There are no good wars with the following exceptions. The American Revolution, World War II, and the Star Wars trilogy.
You forgot the Civil War.
No, it's not.
That one doesn't count?
It's a Simpsons reference again.
That's okay. What they said.
Very early Simpsons episode. It's a disclaimer at the end because they were glorifying war in the episode.
Okay.
He said, in real life, there are no good wars. With the following... This is Bart. He says, the following exceptions. American Revolution, World War II, and the Star Wars trilogy. Which at the time was just the Star Wars trilogy. That's... Nowadays we say the Orig Tridge.
We do, huh?
Starring Boba Feet. Boba Feet.
Boba Feet?
Boba Fruit by the Foot. Yeah. Okay, we are over time. no, we're not over time, but we're at time. So we will talk to you guys very soon, but for you it will be a week. And in the meantime, just remember, we used to be a bear.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.